You're listening to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast, where it's not always advisable, but it is always endorsed.
All right. Hello again, everybody. This is Adam Tracy. Welcome to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast. And today I have with me the mighty and powerful Miss Mara. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you for coming on. This is truly a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this one since we first started communicating because you are a
dominatrix.
Dominatrix, exactly. And we have had a whole host of people from all walks of life, but are yet to have a dominatrix. So I'm very happy that you've taken the opportunity and the time to spend with us here. So I have to ask the question, how do you get into it?
Yeah, I actually started because I had my dream 9-to-5 job working for corporate. And then I had a really manipulative boss. And instead of being like victimized by all of the stuff that she was kind of instigating behind the scenes, BDSM popped into my head because I thought of like games and manipulation and play and the dynamics between people and power exchange. And so I actually looked for clubs in Los Angeles to see if I could attend an event. But instead I found a dungeon and that's kind of where I started.
So that obviously begs the question, how does one find a dungeon, right? Like, is there like a website? I mean, how do you find a dungeon? Just out of curiosity.
So I honestly just looked up BDSM Los Angeles and then a forum page popped up and it said this dungeon place was a great place to kind of get your feet wet. I didn't know that it was actually like a house, like a dungeon house. I thought it was like they hosted events and then, you know, it was a space that people could go in and play. Well, the latter was true, but the first part wasn't just events. It was an actual business. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I scheduled an appointment to interview and I stayed there for 3 years before going independent.
Well, awesome. So there is obviously, like with anything, there's training involved, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. You got good at your craft. How?
So because I didn't have any professional or lifestyle experience, I really had to start from, you know, nothing, from the bottom. And because there were multiple levels of entertainers there, as we would call them, I literally got put on shifts with different people at different times. And during our downtime, they kind of taught me the ropes, literally and figuratively.
Unintended, huh?
Yeah. And it was really cool. Like I got to learn a bunch of different people's styles along with the basics. And so I kind of, that along with just sessioning and building my own experience, you know, taught me my own style.
Yeah. So you graduate from like your, it's like an apprenticeship, I guess, is like the best way of like.
I guess it's a self, like, because I don't think in this industry it's necessary to have an apprenticeship. However, it helps drastically because it's literally jumpstarting you into the industry, especially if you have no knowledge of it.
Right, right. Okay, so let's say you come out on your own, you emerge from the dungeon, right? Mm-hmm. And here you are. What's the marketing plan? Like I'm a guy, I'm into this. How do I find you?
So pre-pandemic and I guess, there's a FOSTA-SESTA bill that had passed. So,
yes, I'm familiar.
Yes. So yes. For those who don't know about that, it's basically that third parties like Craigslist or back in the day, Backpage was a huge source for all of these advertisements. They're liable for, you know, possible human trafficking and sex trafficking and the works. And unfortunately, because of that law that had passed, a lot of online advertisements shut down. So either, you know, that was transported to like Switzerland, so a Switzerland account, not unlike the movies, it's true. There's, you know, a company that had moved their entire servers and company to Switzerland and are now hosting there. So they are legally allowed to have advertisements. And that can be global, but because they're not sourced here in the United States, you know, they are allowed to kind of loophole that. But prior to all of that, it was everything that and anything online. You know, MySpace even was probably an OG version of advertising that some people used back in the day. And so now it's kind of like this weird modge podge of, you know, wherever people can advertise on social media without being too explicit or leading into OnlyFans as well, because that also rose from on the backs of sex workers. And so there's like a, right now it's kind of like a conglomerate of things that are happening, but it's primarily through the web.
Gotcha. So there's different on-ramps, right? So like another people we've had on in that are sex workers, right? Like you've got your cam girls, you've got your OnlyFans girls, you got anything. Like, where do you fit in that ecosphere? Do you use OnlyFans to like generate the clients? Do you just use it as an alternative source of income? Do you cam? How does that kind of fit in, or does it not fit in at all?
So one thing that I would like to distinct myself from in the beginning is that I'm not an escort. And that I have nothing against escorts. I have no ill will towards them, no judgment. However, it's just something I don't do because I'm not comfortable with that.
Sure.
And so, but that industry bleeds over to, you know, BDSM as well, because it's such a gray area of sexual, you know, orientations and deliverables and stuff like that, services that kind of gets misconstrued. Well, on OnlyFans, a lot of people can, I guess, free themselves, and because it's behind a paywall, they are allowed to post nudes or things that normally they can or cannot do to influence their services. So for me, for example, I am never nude on in my in-person sessions. However, on my OnlyFans, I will have, you know, maybe a topless photo here, or like more you'll see more of me on there.
Right.
Than you would, you know, in person. And I feel like that's kind of the appeal, is like, oh, I'm paying for a subscription where I'm going to get like really candid images where she's not necessarily dressed up, you know, to the nines. She's, you know, kind of in the comfort of her own home, and I get to see her in her own space. And it's almost like I'm with her in person.
Right. Right. So it's a different experience altogether, is what you're saying.
Right.
It's not like this like honeypot for your main business. Like,
correct. It's supplemental. However, I also have people in my industry who have a free OnlyFans, and they just post all of the stuff that they've taken from past photo shoots, which are, you know, safe for work. And, you know, if you'd like to tip them, then that's where the supplemental income also comes in handy.
Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Very cool. So I'm a guy, right? So, and I'm looking for your services. How do I know what to pay you, and how do you set prices? Like, how does that come in? I mean, is there like a market rate? Like, how do you do market intelligence, right? Like, how does that work?
So because I've been doing this for over 8.5 years now, I feel like I'm in the first rush of people who have really popularized kink and BDSM after or as media has been portraying it more and more to the public, the general masses. Like, I was still working at the dungeon while 50 Shades of Grey was coming out. And during that time, I was already developing my own website. And as a person who is going to be going into something that is heavily marketed, I do my own research and see what other people are doing. And I looked up a bunch of other mistresses across the nation to see what the average rates were, to see what they've put on their websites. And so I've spent hours kind of fine-tuning what services and fetishes I offer, what my hard limits are, including like I don't escort, I don't, you know, receive penetration or oral. That is listed clearly on there as well. And then for hourly rates, you kind of have an idea of what I charge. But for me personally, I like to, you know, have a fair tribute rate for each type of service. So for example, if somebody is just into fert worship and they're not interested in me dominating them, they're not going to be charged the same amount as somebody who wants rope, who wants to be whipped, who wants to be bound in bondage, who wants all this other stuff that I'm going to have to prepare and clean up later. So based on the equipment and the energy that I have to put into the session, that'll dictate how much per hour that I will charge. Now, other mistresses have a flat fee. It doesn't matter what type of fetish that they're into or what services they're going to say, they are XYZ per hour period. And some people have a scaling system. Some people are super firm with their plans. And so you kind of have to see which mistress fits you and who you really vibe with, because even though there's a lot of us that do similar things, all of us are different. All our styles are different. And, you know, it's based off of who you resonate with, right?
Right.
Based on what you put out there.
Right. So hourly, based on various factors that come down to effort and involvement and levels of involvement.
Or even outfits, because if somebody wants me in a full latex getup, that takes time to get into.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I've got them on all the time and it takes like hours to get me in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, not only that, like if they want it super shiny, not only do I have to put that thing on, I gotta like lube the whole thing up, you know? And it's an experience, not just for them, but also for myself. And so if I'm going to be doing all of these shenanigans,
yeah,
I'm going to make sure that I'm
paid for it. Yeah, logically. Right. So you did some market intelligence. You looked at it, whatever people are doing it, and then you go, okay. So now let's talk about this. Your clientele. I would imagine they come from all walks of life, right?
Yes.
That tends to be like the thing, right? And with like any sort of fetish, and I don't know if that's the right word, but with any sort of like kink BDSM, my research is seemingly, it draws a wide swath of society. Do you ever look at anybody and say, hey, this guy, you know, is a C-level executive at some whatever, and say, I'm going to charge him more?
I think in that case, in the beginning, I've had clients who came to me who were mouthy. I'm going to put it that way.
Yeah.
Because they are in those high ranking positions, they are used to being in charge all the time and possibly, you know, speaking to their employees in that type of manner. Well, I try to remind them in the emails that we exchange that I'm the one that they're seeking and I'm the one in charge. So if they're going to speak to me, to speak to me with respect, because this is my full-time job. And this is also something that I'm very proud of and that I am going to be facilitating for them. And so this one guy would try to play it cool, kind of like a, you know, the screwball slapstick type of person from, you know, the movies back in the day. They would try to be like a wise guy, you know, and try to be cool because there were an older gentleman. I was like, look, I require two references if I've never played with you before so that I can, you know, do my research and make sure that this person is, you know, safe to play with.
Sure.
And even though he had those two references checked, like, even one of them was like, yeah, this one can be a little bit, you know, strong in his opinions, but he's fun to play with. For me personally, I had to let him go because I was like, I don't care how much money you have. I am not going to tolerate this type of attitude. And I don't think he expected that to happen because he wrote me back and he was like, I hope you change your mind in the future. And I look forward to playing. Like he was super, he dropped the act and he was kind of like, I don't know what to do now. So I was like, let's just let it rest. If I ever change my mind, I will contact you, but it hasn't. So that was somebody that I let go.
So you'll turn down the wrong client is what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, but see,
it's not this like, hey, if you have space, come on. Like it's
correct.
I turned down the wrong client. There has to be a fit and there has to be obviously like this mutual respect and your place, your rules, your dungeon, like that's it.
Yeah, because it's kind of like a job interview, right? Like if you're not already like in tune with the person through email and then you get to like a phone interview and you're just like, whoa, this person's really not my thing. How are you going to work with them when it comes to doing the actual job?
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it's different than my line of work. But yeah, I see that. Like people get mad at me, maybe they yell at me. Like, yeah, I get that. Yeah.
However, I do have to say that on the opposite end of the spectrum, there were some people who couldn't afford my hourly rate. And instead of turning them away so soon, I gave them the opportunity to share skills that they do have in order to trade, as well as paying, you know, partial of the tribute. So for one person, they were a recent graduate and they just got into civil engineering or something. And so they weren't making a lot of money up front in the first couple of years that they were in that job. So, but they really wanted to see me and they were super polite. And they were just like, is there anything I can do to, I guess, just play with you? Cause that's what I want to do. And I was like, because this person's attitude is so open-minded and just, you know, accepting of the fact that this is what it is and they're willing to do something that I would like them to do, I was like, what skills do you have? And he was like, carpentry. And I was like, okay, BDSM furniture is expensive. Right, can you make this?
Right.
Yeah. So I found something that he could potentially like create for me. And he bought the supplies because, you know, wood wasn't that expensive. He had all the varnishes and the screws that he had already because that's what he does on the side. And so he paid me half of my hourly rate. And then on the day that we went to play, he literally just brought this finished piece of furniture. And then we played and we had a great time and he became a regular. So there's things like that where it's like, you probably wouldn't think of trading like that because most people would be like, what do you think I am? I only accept cash. Well, in my case, it's like, this would have cost me $500 to, you know, $1,200 online. Plus shipping, plus all this other stuff. But he was in my area and I was able to negotiate it and literally get it for like not even a fraction of the price. I didn't have to pay anything. So,
right. That's yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. So like you're open to barter, I guess, in certain circumstances. Yeah. That's interesting. It's very interesting. So you are, and this is a question. If you're not comfortable, don't answer. But here's two questions, actually. If you're not comfortable, just tell me. Number one, there is this blurred line, and you kind of mentioned it before, that specifically you're not an escort. Mm-hmm. And there undoubtedly are, I would imagine, there are, in fact, BDSM escorts, right? Yes. There's people mm-hmm. who kind of cross into that line, no judgment, but yeah, there is.
Right.
And you compete with them to a degree. You must, in a way, yeah. mm-hmm. right? How do you kind of overcome that, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're offering a service you don't, right? Mm-hmm. Not, again, no judgment, but they're offering a service you don't, a service that obviously many men would like. How do you compete?
So I don't think there's actually that much competition, to be honest. I feel like there's more competition with other people who do the same thing that I do versus people who are escorts, because first, there are less escorts that cross over to the BDSM realm mm-hmm. than those that don't. Secondly, I think there's more of an appeal to those who actually don't offer sex as a service because it's a denial. It's a form of denial, and tease and denial.
Right.
Which a lot of people are super into, and that's part of the whole game. And then third, I think it's more that it doesn't become competition. If ever, I've actually made friends with escorts who were open to bringing me in as a cameo to like double dom together. Mm-hmm. And so it would be paid more obviously for their services of being an escort, but I would just come in and facilitate BDSM with them.
Gotcha.
So gotcha. I feel like collaboration is such a huge part of this world, even though it does seem like there's a lot of competition. And if you collaborate with the right people, you know, more opportunities open and yeah. Everybody makes money.
Yeah. So inherently it's not a direct competition because of the nature of the work, because of the, as you point, the denial aspect is really the hook or one of the hooks, right? And so, but you've collaborated with escorts and offered your services alongside theirs and mm-hmm. they do their thing, you do your thing, and everybody makes more money.
Yeah. I'm a great instigator too. So like, yeah. I really like to get people hot and bothered. And then I'm just like, okay, bye.
Okay, yeah, I got
to
go. Right? It's been a peach. I'll see you guys later. All right. You kids have fun. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. No, that's great. Yeah. Okay. See you later. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know, like, as far as like, here's another question, right? Mm-hmm. We can cut this one too. But as far as like payment goes, right? Obviously, you may have clients that don't want certain people, aka spouses, to know mm-hmm. that they're doing that. Is it just a cash business? Is it a crypto business? Like, how, you know, or are you just swiping credit cards and people are fine? Are you doing all three? Like how do you do that? Like, what's your, I guess, preferred point of payment?
So it's a universal I guess, trait to have a deposit down for a in-person session, or like if you're going to be doing something remote, which is virtually kind of, you know, on, you know, Zoom or whatever, that payment is upfront in full. I like to take about 25% upfront just so that I know that they're not going to waste my time and that we have a set date and time scheduled so that I could put it in my calendar. And if anybody else overlaps with them, you know, they are priority, right? I can also use that to stack all of my, you know, sessions, say that, right, you know, I have a day dedicated in a dungeon and I'll just like try to fill that up. So that is usually paid through a myriad of ways. I personally accept Amazon gift cards, like e-gift cards, or, you know, they can pay through Cash App, but they can't write in the comments. I'll know it's from them because it's a specific amount dedicated to them in that session only and in the time frame that I tell them to send the payment.
Yep.
And then also, I also don't say like I'm Goddess or Domina Mara on those right, sites. Right. So I'm a very like vanilla account that won't look suspicious at all. It looks either like a store or just a regular person that maybe they needed freelance from or something.
Right.
And then, you know, crypto is another one. I think that's kind of a great option because there's an anonymity already kind of thing that goes behind it. Yeah. Even with the blockchain. And then, yeah, I think things like PayPal can be very dangerous. I don't use that form anymore, even with the people that I've seen for over 6 years, just because they have been notorious for shutting down sex worker accounts. Yes. Right. Because they have been linked to bank accounts that have been labeled or listed as sex worker accounts.
Yeah.
So, and then they never got any of that money back. And not only that, I think PayPal also started doing tax information this year. So that is just also a not a great way to tie into business. So those are kind of my three main ones that I like to use. And it's been working really well.
So you don't own Miss Mara BDSM LLC and then have like accounts under your name like that, right?
So I do not. However, I do still file taxes because there are other my business that I do receive 1099s from, and I do have records of transactions. So I do list those under my name, my legal name, and then, you know, my alias as.
Right. Right. What I'm saying is like, you know, half-heartedly, like you don't have like a Stripe account that shows up on the credit card that says BDSM services.
No. Like, they would have shut it down.
Literally have some booth about what otherwise some people may not have so much tolerance for. So,
and so the reason why messages and descriptions are also a big deal is because I've known sex workers to use Cash App and then they were closed down because somebody had written, "Thank you so much, mistress," in the comments.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just that one slip up is just detrimental because if they didn't cash out, they're not going to get that money back. Rarely do they get that money back. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They can hold it for 180 days and then not give it to you. So, yeah, that's it's a crazy world. I'm jealous because your world sounds so much more interesting than mine. But, it is what it is. But
I did a little bit of research, though, and I think that the empire that you've built is pretty impressive. I think having your hand in a lot of different pots is great because you don't have to stick all your eggs in one basket. And I really like that you have branched off to do something like this, where people can hear my type of story, because I've had a YouTube channel for a little bit and I was demonetized on there because they were like, she's a sex worker, you know? But then I see other people who are also into kink and they're thriving on there because they didn't say they were a professional at one point. Yeah. So that was my mistake. But I'm really grateful that there's people like you who are interested in hearing our stories and for giving us a platform to speak in. So thank you.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And I really appreciate you taking the time. Like, this was fantastic and your story is wildly interesting. So I'm anybody I know, they're headed your way. It was a referral. I'll expect my referral bonus coming back to me via Bitcoin or Cash App. I'll give you the exact number and amount to send it. But I appreciate it. And to all my listeners, this is the Adam Tracy Underground, and check us out on SoundCloud and wherever podcasts are heard, and we will get to you next time. Cheers.
Whoa.
Thank you for listening to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast. For more episodes, visit us at adamtracy.io or your leading podcast providers.